Welcome everyone back to the assembly this afternoon. We're going to continue our thoughts, this idea of the older serving the younger. And we're pretty much going to start on page one of the Bible, because we're going to go all the way back to Cain and Abel. We're also going to talk about Seth. And so we go back to the very first family, the first man born, would be old Cain. And you think that he's going to be the one that's going to lead forward with all these promises. He's going to lead the family. Well, that's not how it turned out. As we all know, Cain was not able to, as I said this morning, he didn't quite have the moral fiber as it was to do what was right. And so we're going to look at the story of Cain and Abel. And then we're going to look at the relationship between Cain and Seth. And like I said, this sets kind of the table for this brotherly conflict that we see again and again and again throughout the scriptures. And it's not always what we would expect. And it's the birthright might suggest sometimes God has other plans. For a text, I will go to 1 John, the 3rd chapter. 1 John, the 3rd chapter, verses 11 and 12. So John pretty much sums up the story of Cain. It says, "For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's righteous." And that pretty much sums up the story of Cain and Abel. Cain was wicked. He was evil. He followed wicked thoughts. Whereas Abel was righteous and followed the ways of God. So for a little while this afternoon, it's not a long lesson, but we're going to talk about first, Cain and Abel. So go ahead and get back to your Bible. We're going to start at Genesis, the 4th chapter. And then we'll go from there. We're going to pick up in verse chapter 5 and a little bit into chapter 6, the story of Cain and Seth. Before we go further, let's go to God in order. So let's begin our study of Cain and Abel. Pick up in Genesis chapter 4. And so a lot of this is just reading the account, making a little bit of comment. Genesis chapter 4, verse 1. "Now Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. And then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground." I got to thinking about this. Go back to Genesis chapter 3. Remember the story of the garden? How the serpent has deceived Eve. And we get this great promise in Genesis 3:15, and it says, "And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and he shall bruise your head, and he shall bruise his heel. And to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception and pain you shall bring from childbirth," and so on. But I got to thinking about it from Eve's perspective. So when Eve hears from her seed that this serpent is going to be going to be attacked or is going to be defeated between your seed and her seed. As soon as Cain was born, logic would just set in that in Eve's mind, well, here it is. This is my seed. This is the seed that's going to take care of all of us. It's going to be able to overcome the serpent. I never thought about that before, but I would have supposed in Eve's mind, she would assume, okay, here we go. Here's Cain. This is my firstborn. This is the firstborn of all. And Cain is certainly going to be the one who's strong enough and powerful enough. And he's this is it. You know, as parents, I think we all do that with our children. We think our children are the best and the smartest and the most athletic and the best looking. And obviously, God said, "From my seed, and here's my seed, here's Cain." So can you imagine the disappointment that old Eve must have felt when she suddenly realized that Cain was not going to be the answer to this prophecy. Cain was not going to be the answer to this prayer. We have a different perspective of it, I think, looking back. But imagine being in real time. Eve must have assumed that here we go. Here is my seed, and things are going to be taken care of. But as we know, that was not the case. So it says, Abel was a keeper of sheep. Cain was a tiller of the ground. So Cain's a farmer, and Abel is a rancher. And in the process of time, verse 3, "It came to pass that Cain brought in an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. And Abel also brought in the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So I've always wondered, where did the command come that they were supposed to bring these offerings? Or were they commanded to bring the offerings? Did they just do it of their own free will? And again, I don't know. That's just something that's not mentioned in the Bible. It doesn't tell us everything that God said and every word that God spoke to these people. But apparently they knew, somehow inherently, that they were supposed to give back of what they had received. And sure enough, this is out of this first fruits again. Abel brings the first fruit of the firstborn of his flock, and he presents as a blood sacrifice now to God. Cain rather. I don't know that Cain did anything terrible. It says Cain brought the offerings of his ground. He brought, which was going to be eventually legislated into the law of Moses anyway. You have the first fruits. So I don't know that Cain did anything up to this point terrible. I don't know. But somewhere God must have given him a command. Because I don't think God would have been upset with Cain if he had not established something in order for him to follow. But anyway, whatever the case is, at this point, Cain's still okay. He's not happy. And it says his countenance fell. He's very upset about the whole thing. Why Abel was accepted and his offering was not accepted. So God calls him out in verse 6. And the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? And countenance, that's just a fancy way of saying you got a long face. He's just pouting. He's got that face. He's just upset. Why has your countenance fallen? I've always liked this verse 7. I kind of underline this. If you do well, will you not be accepted? God didn't say, it's over, you gave me the wrong sacrifice, you're going to be gone. It's not like God was ready to kick Cain out. To me, the way I read this, it's almost like he's giving Cain a chance. Hey, if just do what I ask you to do. If you do well, you can fix this. That's how I've always taken that passage. If you do well, will you not be accepted? It's not like God had given up on Cain. He just says, if you do well, you'll be accepted. If you don't, you won't. If you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire for you, but you should rule over it. So that's really kind of a positive spin that God's when he's speaking to Cain. Hey, all you got to do is do what you're supposed to. It's almost like the teacher in a classroom, and you give a test, and the kid makes about a 30 on it, and you come back and you say, listen, you're going to have another test here in a couple weeks. If you do well, and if you study, and if you do what you're supposed to do, and you ask questions, you're going to be okay. It's going to be fine. But if you don't, I'm just telling you, you're going to be in trouble, and it's probably going to get after you. And I kind of take that the same way that God has given Cain a chance. He's just saying, listen, fix it. Just fix your problem. But that's not quite how Cain took it. Cain wasn't really happy about it. And it says, Cain talked in verse 8 with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were both in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. And the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And that's one of, of course, the famous lines, am I my brother's keeper? And we find out later in the Bible that, yeah, we are our brother's keeper. We are supposed to be aware and cognizant of what other people are going through. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's all sorts of things that's kind of leading towards that we are our brother's keeper. But Cain didn't quite see it like that. I don't know what they talked about. I've always wondered what that conversation was like between Cain and Abel as they talked in the field. But whatever it is, Cain somehow killed Abel, his brother, and then tried to play it off like it wasn't a big deal. Verse 10. And he said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. And when you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you. A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on the earth. And so there's the punishment of Cain. He's going to have to live out his days as a fugitive and a vagabond by his own. Just scrambling to survive from place to place. I got thinking about that again. Let's say if I was to have to do that now, and I'm 48 years old, lived to about 70, that's kind of the general going rate, well, that'd be 22 years. Maybe if I lived to 80, 32 years? I mean, still be pretty rough. How long did these guys live back there before the flood? Now, we're talking several hundred years. Oh, Cain's going to have to just roam around for hundreds of years trying to just eke out a survival in this harsh world. I mean, so it's a really difficult punishment. Of course, it was a really difficult sin. It was, you know, by killing his brother. And Cain is like, well, I don't know if I can handle this. And that's pretty much what he says in verse 13. Cain said to the Lord, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me. The Lord said to him, therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. And so that's how Cain's going to live out his existence. Now, I've heard a lot of crazy things about this mark of Cain, whatever Cain's mark was. I don't know what it was. But somehow the Lord made a mark so that people would know, which would have been his brethren, by the way. It would have been his kinfolk, that they would leave him alone and not kill him. And I bet there wasn't too much longer. Cain was probably wishing they just would kill him, just to get this over with, this life that he now had to lead, having to just sketch out a life as a vagabond and as a fugitive. And so he sent away. Verse 16, then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. Now some people think this land of Nod, just kind of a play on words, I really don't know if that was an actual geographical location or if it just kind of means just out in the wilderness. He's out in the sticks by himself, but he just had to go to the east of Eden. And a lot of times in the Bible, you read about going east. East is never, you know, the Lord, the temple always faced the east, the tabernacle faced the east. So if you wandered outside of that, you were going the wrong way. And so for whatever that's worth, O Cain is now set to wander out in the wilderness. And that tells the story of Cain and Abel. So can you imagine old Eve sitting there? See what a happy day it was when Cain was born. Here's this seed that God has promised to me. Okay, it's not going to be Cain. Son number two, it's not going to be Abel. Because Abel's dead. And so now she's 0 for 2 on her kids. And you got to know that's probably just tearing this lady apart. And so now we're going to get introduced to the third son. It's like son by the name of Seth. So Cain's gone. He's out east in the wilderness wandering around. Abel has been killed. And so the Lord is going to prepare another son to fulfill this prophecy. Genesis 4:25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and named him Seth. For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed. So now there's hope again through old Eve. And these weren't the only three kids she had. In fact, it goes on to say that she had many sons and daughters. But now we have Cain, Abel, and now we have a third in line, Seth. So now what I want to kind of do is give you a comparison. There's some interesting things that compare the lineage of Cain to the lineage of Seth. It's real interesting. So I kind of figured how to do it like this. I've just split the screen. So over here on the left, you're going to have Cain. And over here on the right, you're going to have Seth. And there's several things we're going to notice that are very similar and almost parallel in the telling of this story. First, we've got Cain. So Cain goes away, and Cain knew his wife, it says, and she conceived and bore Enoch. So the first son of Cain is Enoch. And he built a city, and he called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. So we see what Cain got interested in is he was kind of barred from the garden. He's wandering around in the east, just trying to survive. He turned his attentions to building a city, of trying to get people together, of trying to consolidate power and to build a city. And he was very successful in that. Well, at the same time now we have Seth. And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh. And you're going to notice there's very similar names between the two lineages. In fact, we're about to talk about some that are the exact same name. It kind of gets a little confusing. But they're going to be similar for whatever reason. But notice what happened in the generation past Seth. That men began to call on the name of the Lord. So for the first time, people are actually gathering to worship. And they begin to come together and call upon the name of the Lord. So on Cain's side, Cain has focused his energy into building cities and putting together consolidating power. On Seth's line, people have begun to call upon the name of the Lord and have begun to worship, which is almost the same exact wording that Paul uses in the book of Romans. Romans 10 and 13, for whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. It's worship. For the first time, people are actively worshiping God. And that happened in the generation past Seth in the time of his son of Enosh. So, we already see kind of a break. We have Cain's folks who are not spiritual. And we have Seth's lineage, which is spiritual. And they are calling upon the name of the Lord. This is where it might get a little confusing. We got same names, but different men. And by the way, these verses here are all from the book of Genesis. I just wrote down the verse where I grabbed these from. On Cain's side, it says Cain knew his wife and bore and conceived Enoch. And then later on, it talks about a man of the name of Lamech. Well, these two names actually cross over to both sides. And so I put them over here on Seth. These are different people in different time periods, some separated by a couple hundred years, possibly. But we have the same names. On Seth's side, we have a fellow by the name of Jared, lived 162 years, and begot Enoch. Okay, these are not the same Enochs. These are different men. Okay, so keep that in mind as we go through. Then we get down at the bottom, we have Methuselah, lived 187 years, and begot Lamech. These are not the same Lamechs. And I think that's done for a reason, because it's going to give us a pretty good comparison of the Enoch of Cain and the Enoch of Seth. The Lamech of Cain and the Lamech of Seth. Just kind of give you a little bit better picture here. I found this. I thought this was a pretty good little chart. I know it's probably small to read. But it has the genealogy of Adam. Through the lineage of Cain, through the lineage of Seth. Unfortunately, there's no lineage of Abel. He was killed too early. And then we have the other sons and daughters over here that are not named in the Bible. But as you start seeing down, like Enoch is the son of Cain. Enoch on Seth's line is several generations down. In fact, it's the seventh generation. Okay? Then you got Lamech over here. He is the seventh generation of Cain. Lamech is way down here. He is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the ninth generation of Seth. So we just got to keep that in mind, that there's different names, different people, but they have the same name, rather. Just keep in mind they're totally different people. So now let's talk about some of the parallels between these two genealogies. This is pretty neat. One, let's talk about the seventh generation from Adam. The seventh generation from Adam. And we have a tendency to know that that number seven in the Bible usually has an idea of completion. And so I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but the seventh from both sides, it kind of gives you a pretty good idea of the direction of where the lineage is going. So on Cain's side, the seventh generation from Adam is this man, Lamech. And it says, then Lamech took for himself two wives. The name of one was Adah, and the name of the second was Zillah. So there's got to be something significant about that. And the fact is, that's the first time a man has taken two wives. This is the first time that polygamy has been brought into the equation. In every other instance, it's been one wife for one man. Well, that kind of tells me that things were starting to kind of veer quickly off the path. Now compare that with the fellow that's the seventh generation from Adam on Seth's line, and that's Enoch. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And so it's always kind of, I know it's confusing, it's kind of hard to understand, but it sure appears that Enoch did not die, that he was taken up. Every one of these passages talks about so-and-so begat so-and-so for so many years, and then he died. So-and-so begat so-and-so, he lived for so many years, and then he died. Until you get to Enoch, it doesn't say Enoch died, it says God took him. So as best I can tell, Enoch was taken up because he was a man who walked with God. So see the comparison between Lamech, same generation. You had Lamech was over here seeing how powerful he could get, how many wives he could come up with, compared with Enoch, the man who walked with God. Kind of interesting. Here's another interesting comparison. That there are two different Lamechs, but listen to the different messages that they have. Cain's Lamech and Seth's Lamech. Listen to the difference of these two men's message. In fact, as you read through, on Cain's side and on Seth's side, these are the only two men that have a quote. As you go through Genesis 4 and 5, these are the only two that have a quotation. Look how different the quotation is. On the sinful Cain side, it says, this is Cain speaking, or Lamech speaking, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice, wives of Lamech, listen to my speech. For I have killed a man for wounding me, even a young man for hurting me. If Cain should be avenged sevenfold, then Lamech 77-fold. He is so proud of the fact that he has killed somebody that hurt him. You see how sinful Cain's side has gotten? He is so proud of that fact. Look at me, I've killed a man for wounding me, even this young man. Whatever they did to Cain, they ought to do it 10 times worse to me. That's Lamech on Cain's side. But what about Lamech on Seth's side? This was Noah's daddy. Lamech was Noah's dad. And we know that Noah was a righteous man. Well, apparently he learned it from his daddy. Listen to his words. He says, this one, speaking of Noah, will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. He's a very spiritual man. And he's kind of prophesying. He sees what's going on. He sees how bad the world is at this time. And he's prophesying that Noah's going to be the one to take care of. Noah's going to be the one to comfort us. Same name, but it is not the same person. You got sinful Lamech on Cain's side, bragging and boasting about how he killed somebody. That's definitely going to be an ancestor of old Cain, right? And then you've got Seth over here, the comforter. And he is talking about how Noah is going to bring peace and comfort to this land. Interesting. Last part that's kind of interesting here. Both of the accounts end with a man and mentioning his three sons. I don't know if there's any meaning to that, but I just find that interesting. In each one, it kind of talks about how they lived, how they died, whatever, who they begot. But this one, both of them talk about the last guy in the lineage and his three sons. So on Cain's side, it talks about Jabal, Jubal, and Tubal-Cain. And that's kind of where the story ends with the lineage of Cain. We don't know what happened with Cain's lineage after these three boys, Jabal, Jubal, and Tubal-Cain. It's kind of interesting. Talks about Jabal was the one who dwelt in he was the rancher, dwelt in the tents, had the livestock. Jubal was the one who had the harp and the flute, was playing the music. And Tubal-Cain was the craftsman. He was a metalsmith. And that's it. That's all we know about Cain. We don't hear anything else about Cain, his family, anywhere else in the scriptures. It ends with the story of Lamech's three sons. And then on the other side, on Seth, guess where Seth's story ends? For the most part, we hear about Noah. We hear about his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then it's like the story just kind of changes. We turn the page, and now we're going to start talking about Noah and the flood. So I don't know if this is completely by design, but it sure seems interesting that these accounts are somewhat parallel to one another. And that's the lineage of Seth and Cain. Cain's was evil. Seth's was trying to be good. Seth was trying to be righteous, and that's where we get Lamech to Noah from. We get some righteous people. Over here, Cain's people were mean. They were sorry people. And then we turn the page to Genesis chapter 6. It says, now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, that daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful. And they took wives from themselves of all whom they chose. So we got the sons of God and the daughters of men. And this has been a very controversial, almost crazy passage throughout the Bible, is the way people have interpreted this. But I want to try to keep it in context. So Genesis chapter 6, we continue. This is after the seventh generation of Cain and the ninth generation of Abel, of Seth. We're to the point where the world is just terrible. We have the sons of God and the daughters of men. Verse 3, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh. Yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days and also afterward, when the sons of men came to the daughters of men and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. So the sons of God and the daughters of men started coming together and having children. And this is where it gets crazy. There are all sorts of strange interpretations of this passage. Probably the most common is that these daughters of men, they were somehow mixed up with these angels who fell from their first estate, and the angels came down, that Satan and his angels were cast out of heaven, and they came down and started having relations with mortal women, and it's crazy. And people will pick up in Jude, and they'll pick up in 2 Peter, and try to tie these things together about these angels who lost their first location to live, and I don't think that's what this has to talk about at all. It is completely and totally out of the context of what we've been studying. Remember, we've been studying this horrible line of Cain. We've been studying this righteous line of Seth. And now we've gotten to the point where we have the sons of God and the daughters of men. Let me keep going. Verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and there was intent in the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth. And he was grieved in his heart. He was sorry he'd even made it. Now notice he didn't say in verse 6, and the Lord was sorry that he had made Cain and his descendants. He didn't say it like that. He said the Lord was sorry that he had made man. Because as much as old Seth's line tried to stay righteous, they didn't. As much as Seth's line tried to do what was right, and they tried to call upon the name of the Lord, there just wasn't enough of them to make do. They eventually got overtaken by the evil that was in the world. So I'm going to go back to my chart now. I'm going to say, this is my interpretation of this, the daughters of men, in reference to Cain's side, the evil side that had no regard for God, that's the daughters of men. The sons of God were the descendants of Seth's side. But unfortunately, over the years, the lineage began to cross. And for the first time, I think we're introduced to a concept that's going to be throughout the Bible as well. And that's the concept of a remnant. There was not a lot of good, moral people on Seth's side by the end. They turned just as wicked as Cain's side. And as these daughters of men and the sons of God began to interact, kind of like Judge Judy says, if you put one bad blueberry in with the whole basket of good blueberries, the good blueberry is not going to make the bad one good. It works the other way. That one bad one is going to make the whole basket turn bad. I'm afraid that's what happened here. So by the time of Noah, these two lineages, the side that was trying to be righteous, oh, it had a couple. It had Laman. It had Noah. It had, well, I can't really even say Noah's family, can I? Because the next generation past Noah, pretty much just as sinful as most of them. So I think that's what it's talking about when it talks about the sons of God and the daughters of men. And so this very small remnant is faithful down to the point where it ended up 8 souls that entered into the ark. And God said, I've seen enough of this world. Like I said, he didn't say, I wish I hadn't created the descendants of Cain. He says he was sorry for creating man. And he was, for all of it, only one who saw favor was Noah and Noah's family. So what's all this have to mean about anything? Well, poor old Eve started off with Cain. Cain wasn't the seed. Went to Abel. Abel wasn't the seed. But luckily, Luke chapter 3, another one of those genealogies that we have a tendency to overlook, talks about Jesus. Oh, there is going to be someone coming. There is going to be someone that's going to be able to overcome this serpent and fulfill this prophecy. It's Jesus. And you start following Luke chapter 3 all the way down to the bottom of this genealogy. The son of Noah, the son of Lamech, the son of Methuselah, Enoch, Jared, wait a minute, Canaan, Enosh, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the son of God. And so the lineage did not come through the firstborn or the secondborn. The lineage of Jesus actually came through the thirdborn, that being from Seth. And so this kind of sets the table now for all of this brotherly conflict that we're going to see again and again in the Old Testament. Things don't always end up the way that we think they are. And so God is going to make sure that his plan is put into the place the way that he wants it put into place, even if it's not what we are expecting. And so from the very beginning, this idea of the younger supplanting the older, that the older has to serve the younger, has been set forth on about page 3 of the Bible, and it's going to carry itself through the entire scriptures. So there's our study of Cain and Abel and Seth.